theologians as a whole are known to be sort of a prickly bunch. Any number of things will put their panties in a bunch, as the expression goes. And the prickliness of theologians, it's not a new thing either. The history of the Christian church is full of examples of how easily annoyed theologians get. For example, Protestant churches around the world observed the 500th anniversary of the start of the Protestant Reformation this week, which is a deep and abiding argument that has plagued the cause of Christian unity for 500 years. Let's be honest, though, arguing over theological convictions is not some little thing that only happened 500 years ago. We need only look at the recent history in the Episcopal Church to see that those theological arguments continue. And let's be honest, it's not just people who wear the official hat or collar of theologian who get their panties in a bunch over religious convictions. Everyday people of faith, people like us, have been known to, shall we say, squabble over theological differences. You can ask any five Episcopalians the same theological question and probably get like six or seven different answers. For example, if I did a quick survey of those of us here this morning, I'm willing to bet that there would be a wide variety of answers to questions about what happens at that altar when the elements of the Eucharist are blessed. Sometimes theological arguments get average, everyday people all annoyed, and this can feel threatening. So, of course, the good news is that having these arguments is nothing new. Even before the start of the Protestant Reformation 500 years ago, people were arguing about theology. We can even look back as nearly 2,000 years ago to the earliest days of Christianity to see that those arguments, those theological arguments, threatened to break apart the church. And that's the historical setting of the first letter of John that we read today. The community that John was addressing was experiencing deep division. People in the young church were arguing about who Jesus was. And it was a deeply divided people who received John's letter. Some people had even left that young church because they disagreed over their beliefs about who Jesus was. So it's the faithful remnant who receives this letter from John, the small group of people who stayed behind, who stayed true to what they believed Jesus said about himself. And as a church who has experienced theological arguments before, I have to imagine that the people who remained after this argument were probably hurt by those fights. And it is that hurt that John seeks to address in the little portion of today's letter. John is writing to what he calls the saints, those who remained faithful to Christ even in the face of disagreements and tension. But notice that John isn't suggesting that the faithful ones become smug. John doesn't tell his audience to gloat over the fact that they maintain the right beliefs. Personal or even communal arrogance has no place in church. Instead, John reminds the little church of the important role of love, specifically God's free love. It is the love that God shares with them that makes them children of God. It is love, not the ability to win arguments, but God's free love that makes them children of God. It is love, not being right, but God's free love that again makes them children of God. In today's church, our identity as children of God does not depend on what we do, how much we do, what we believe, how much we believe, or even our ability to win those theological arguments. The only thing that makes us children of God is God's free love for us. In today's church, we are the spiritual descendants of the saints, those early people of the early church. And just like the saints of the early church, there is nothing we do or even nothing we can do to earn God's love. So today we stand with the saints, those holy ones who went before us of the early church, rejoicing in the free gift of God's love. Speaking of gifts, how's this for a transition? I'd like to invite Mary to come on up and share her thoughts about giving to the church, about stewardship. Come on up, Mary.
Good morning.
As we listen to those beautiful words of the Sermon on the Mount, it reminds us of what Jesus is teaching us about how to be a Christian. The Beatitudes are a roadmap, which if we follow, will help us receive our final reward in heaven, which will be great. Spirit, comforted, meek, inherited, righteousness, merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers. These words represent firm principles of our lives if we believe them. We can utilize some of those words as we talk about stewardship. I hope each of our spirits will be comforted and merciful as we are pure in heart when we consider our pledge for next year, because we will inherit something. But seriously, in order for us as a congregation to gather here in the coming years, we must be stakeholders and work as a team to sustain God's house. There's no getting around that. One day we will have to stand on our own without diocese support. The Lord's house works just like ours does, with a budget that we must support, and it has to be maintained. Every year, costs to maintain budgets increase, maybe just a little bit. I'd like to leave you with a question. Are you an owner of your resources, or are you a steward? Money represents a powerful symbol of our labor. Culture, society says we are owners of our material resources. We say, I work long hours, I've earned it. It belongs to me. I could afford that $4 latte on my way to work every day. Why not buy it? A steward would believe his resources comes from God, that he has temporarily given these resources to you. A steward believes everything he has, she has come from the Lord, and he must give a percentage of that back to the Lord. An owner will feel he is not accountable to anyone else but himself or herself. A steward would think otherwise. One day we, owner or steward, will be called upon to give an accounting for how he or she managed those resources we have to a greater authority. So, which one are you? Thank you.
The theme of this year's campaign is proud of our heritage and eager to embrace our future. Today's reading from 1 John reminds us that our heritage extends not just for the 300 years of this congregation, but indeed to the whole of Christian history. We stand in the footsteps of the saints who have come before us. We stand in a long line of faithful people who graciously and gratefully receive the gifts of God's free love for us. We rejoice with those ancestors in faith, whose faithfulness allows us to gather today as children of God. For hundreds of years, All Saints' Day has presented the opportunity to remember those who have gone before us in faith, and one of the ways we remember them is to recall that we stand in the same faith they proclaim, a faith we began to proclaim at our very baptisms. So let's take a look at page 292 in the prayer book, where we will renew our baptismal covenant and recommit ourselves to the faith of our ancestors. And I invite you to rise as you are able. We're looking at page 292. Do you reaffirm your renunciation of